Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am here today, one of your hosts, Susan Franzen, together with Ursula Rudenberg. Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Susan, and hello to you, the listener.
This is the kind of day that makes almost everybody happy. You don't need to listen to the weather report to know it's going to be a beautiful day, at least here in Central Iowa.
And everybody will be commenting on it, probably.
I wonder if it's true everywhere that weather is the ever-ready conversation starter. On a day like this, perfect strangers will smile and say, I hope it's days like this, or looks like we'll have a lovely fall.
Now that you've mentioned it, what is the connection between weather and today's topic, which is climate change?
In some ways, people's response to weather and climate change are opposite. Just as everybody is eager to mouth some general remark about weather, a lot of people will back away from climate change as a controversial topic. Or, on a cold day, will say something like, where is global warming when you need it? Or, I won't say anything. It's too controversial.
So how are we going to keep people from turning away from the station this morning for a more soothing topic since we're planning to talk about climate change?
As I promised on Monday, this will be a humorous program. We are looking to wake people up with laughter. I have a couple of comments from
Stephen Colbert. That's what you told me yesterday.
Yes, that's right. And then at the end of the program, Larry Sloan from the Talent Factory in Nevada will bring some of his talents as a comedian to an interview with Ed Fallon about something that is actually serious. Ed Fallon is walking across the United States coast to coast to wake Americans up to the danger of climate change.
And then Diane Dubinsky is here to talk with us about climate change in the area of the beautiful instead of the humorous. She will be talking about where have all the butterflies gone.
Yes, it's a great start, small and local. Speaking of which, Ursula, I think you went to some local gardens during last Sunday's edible garden tour.
Yes, this is a new tradition in Ames, in the local area, and it's in its second year. And it's a really great way to go and see gardens in our area. About 10 or 12 various local people in the area open up their backyards or their gardens and basically host us as we go around and to see what they do. And it's really great to talk to them about how they tend their gardens. And I ended up having a really nice conversation with Andrea Bosch at the Food at First Garden, which is by Holy Trinity Reformed Church out on Ontario Street, just east of North Dakota Road. And it's really an inspired project. I really enjoyed hearing about it again because it's really inspired to address hunger. And they grow food to give it away to anyone who needs food.
And I personally know people who really rely on that garden.
Mm-hmm.
We do have hunger in our area, like almost everywhere else.
Yeah, the Food at First Garden is having some final public events this week where you can either help harvest what's in their garden or you can help them, you know, kind of close up the garden and pick the last of their produce. And also you can also receive some of the food this weekend. So, Andrea, are you with us by phone?
I am. Good morning.
Hi. Hi, Andrea. So thanks for joining us. You're in Des Moines?
I am right now, but I'm on my way back to Ames shortly. Thanks for having me this morning.
Okay, so we're reaching Andrea through her cell phone from in Des Moines. So, Andrea, tell us a little about the Food at First Garden, okay?
As you've been talking about already, the goal of our garden is really to feed our community and to provide access to fresh produce for those in need. And so we have a space in West Ames on the property of Trinity Reformed Church, which is 3626 Ontario Street. And we've had a lot of great support from the church community there. And we've started the garden and managed it for the last 2 years, really just with the goal of growing food and fresh produce for Food at First, and have harvested all the food either to use in meals that our student group cooks one night a month for Food at First or to donate to their free pantry program, which they do 4 distributions actually now a week. So we've been doing, and as you mentioned, we have a work day tonight from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. We'd love to really continue to grow the community support we have for the garden. And we're going to have a big work day on the 27th from 9 a.m. until noon. It's going to be our last kind of big work day of the season. We'll have a potluck at the end of that, as you said, to kind of put the garden to rest and put down some straw and harvest the last of what we have and plant some garlic seed. And so just, you know, would love to have, again, more community support and anyone who's interested in learning more about what we do to visit with us tonight or on the 27th.
So both of these events are happening at the garden itself?
That's right.
Okay. And that's out on Ontario Street at the Trinity Reformed Church?
Yes.
So both nights are really basically to pick food. Is that correct?
That's right. And, you know, we don't have a lot left at the garden, but, you know, we still have work to do to get things kind of cleaned up and ready to put the garden to bed for the season.
And so this is an invitation to anyone who enjoys gardening or is interested in the issue of hunger and
that's
to...
Right.
To just have some fun and help kind of close up the garden.
That's right. And just, I guess, a little bit more about kind of our volunteer base. So the main bulk of the volunteers have been a group from the Sustainable Agriculture Student Association, Iowa State, of which I'm a member. And so we're really always looking for more community volunteers to come and join us and to take some leadership and help us make decisions and deal with the organization of the garden. And I've been humbled, I guess, by being involved in this project and seeing how much work it really is to grow this fresh food and keep a project going. Given the transient nature of students, we are all really passionate about what we do, but we always are looking for more community support. So it would be great to have more folks out to visit with us either tonight or next Saturday.
So are most of the people that do this garden students?
I would say it's about half of our volunteer base, and the other half has been community members from the church group at Holy Trinity Reformed Church there in West Ames, where the garden is located, and others who've heard about us. So I would say it's about half and half.
So I know you have to leave in a minute. You're traveling, actually. But Andrea, what exactly are folks going to be picking tonight and on Saturday?
What do we have left?
Yeah.
Our greens are always hanging tough as it gets colder. So we've got some really nice kale and collards and chard that are still growing. We've got a really beautiful herb bed that's still got lots of parsley and basil that's there that we'd love to maybe do some processing with. So we have it for the winter. We've still got some cherry tomatoes there. We've got the remnants of other things. It's, I guess really the greens and the tomatoes and the herbs are the main things that we have at the garden.
Okay, nice. Well, are you going to miss the garden?
I will. It's always sad when vegetable season is over, but it's, you know, there's always...
It's always next
year. The time gets filled doing other things, too. So.
Okay, well, Andrea, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to tell us about the garden. And just repeat real quickly again what the invitation is.
Sure. So we are a group of students that help volunteer at the Food at First Garden. It's at 3626 Ontario Street on the property of the Trinity Reformed Church in West Ames. And we will be there tonight harvesting from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then again next Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon. That's the 27th. And that's going to be a harvest party and kind of putting the garden to bed for the season and a potluck at the end. So tonight from 6 to 8 and then next Saturday, the 27th from 9 to noon.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for stopping by.
We should double up our vegetables and not drink so much coffee. We should double up our vegetables and not drink so much coffee. We should get more exercise. How are we going to get more exercise? Oh, we should get more exercise because we are so lazy. vegetables and not drink so much coffee.
But what about the coffee?
Gives me headaches, it gives me shakes. Wakes me up too early and it keeps me up too late. It gives me headaches, it gives me shakes. It wakes me up too early and it keeps me up too late. See, I'm trying to quit coffee because it's dragging me down and all my youthful energy's not coming around. And I'm trying to eat more vegetables every day, but I don't always like my food that way. And I'm trying to get more exercise, but it's so hard to focus on the prize. Yes, it's so hard to focus on the prize. Oh, it's so hard to focus on the prize. Oh, we should all up our vegetables and not drink so much coffee. We should double up our vegetables and not drink so much coffee. We should get more exercise. How are we gonna get more exercise? Oh, we should get more exercise, cause we are so lazy. Park in the back of the parking lot, not in your favorite parking spot. Park in the back of the parking lot, not in your favorite parking spot.
We should ride our bicycles.
We should ride our bicycles.
We should ride our bicycles. Oh, we should ride our bicycles.
This is KHOY Community Radio. Dr. Diane Dubinsky, a professor at Iowa State University in the Department of Ecology. Thank you for joining us today, Diane. I noticed that you are the Iowa State Director for the North Central Climate Science Center. What does that mean?
That is an organization that is a consortium of several universities that meet together and represent about seven states within the north central part of the U.S., and they work with the USGS, and they work with the Park Service and several federal agencies to examine data on climate change and to synthesize that information and to also think about the social implications of climate change.
That sounds pretty overwhelming. I'd like to bring this back to a little personal story. We're being joined later by Larry Sloan,
okay,
who was talking to me yesterday about a memorable experience that he had with a butterfly tree, a monarch tree, when he was a little boy, I think. And they walked along in the field, and all of a sudden this tree exploded, and all these butterflies came out, and it scared him because they made so much noise.
Wow. Yeah, and butterflies are not usually scary. Right?
Well, maybe when you're eight.
It could be scary.
Anyway, but I wonder, do we still have these and these butterfly trees anywhere? These monarch trees?
Well, these are called roosting trees, and monarchs congregate as they're migrating, and they have been known to occur in the area around Story County, in Story City area, and in Boone. I have heard that they've been seen about within the past 10 years, but we don't know for sure if they've been documented recently.
Is this a bad sign that we're not seeing them? Where do monarch butterflies lay their eggs?
Well, actually, it's part of a larger cycle. So the monarchs are moving south now towards Mexico, at least in this area. The central population is headed towards Mexico. And so what we want to know is how many individuals there are across the whole country. And so one individual sighting or lack of sighting is not that significant. But what we're trying to do is document patterns at a larger geographical scale. So we could say, how many places where they used to roost do we see them now? And so that's the kind of thing that some citizen science programs like Monarch Watch are doing. So they have people tagging monarchs and then people releasing them, and we try to collect data on where they go, whether they make it down to Mexico, and then we watch them. And these are different individuals that are coming back to Iowa, so it's multiple generations.
Yeah, I've heard it's like five generations between Canada and Mexico.
Yeah,
which is just mind-boggling. How do they pass that information on to the next little caterpillars?
Right. Yeah, and there are neurobiologists who are studying that right now, so we're still trying to figure that out.
And speaking of citizen scientists, I remember several years ago when a friend of mine was pointing out that we could get these little kits to help these people in Lawrence, Kansas track the monarch butterflies. Is that mm-hmm. still going on?
Yeah. So I'll tell you a little bit about what I've been doing. I'm interested in why we find certain species in certain places across the globe. And butterflies are great to look at and to think of in terms of ecological indicators because they're easy to identify. And for example, in Iowa, we can find over 100 species. They have particular habitat needs, so the caterpillars are eating certain plants. The butterflies, the adults, are nectaring on other plants. And so they're relatively easy to identify, but they're also specialized in terms of what plants they need. So they're good indicators. If you compare them to beetles or ants, they're a lot easier to identify just by looking at them. A lot of these insects that we could use as indicators of environmental conditions, we need to identify using a microscope. So butterflies are great from that perspective. They also have a short generation time. So if there is an environmental change, you can see change within a short amount of time. And then finally, we can divide them up into different kinds of species. Some of them are generalist, and you could find them in your backyard almost any old time. And other ones are really specialized on particular kinds of habitats, like maybe a native grassland or an undisturbed wetland. So those are some of the valuable attributes of them.
Wow. So, and where do we go from here?
Well, from there, we can ask ourselves, what kind of information do we have about butterflies across North America? And we can use that information in the context of climate change to ask, well, are these butterflies moving northward or are they moving up in elevation? Because they're very specialized in their environmental conditions that they want to be in. If you think about butterflies, they're also solar powered. So if you've ever seen a butterfly sitting on a plant on a cold day before the sun comes out, you'll know that their muscles need to warm up in the sun. So there's a very narrow window of environmental conditions under which they can actually fly. So that's another reason why we can use them as indicators. So as we have people surveying butterflies across the U.S. and into Canada and things like that, we can collect data, and even citizen scientists can help do this through programs like eButterfly. You can look up eButterfly on the web. So people are documenting where they see species, and the question is, over decades and over large geographic areas, how are these distributions changing over time? In Europe, and particularly in England, scientists document things really well. They're very, very good at that. They have lots of citizen scientists, and they have decades and decades worth of data on these, you know, meter square units of area where people have been looking at these species, and they can say, well, it looks like certain species are moving northward over time. And so we have really good data about some small portions of the globe, but there's a great opportunity to think about involving citizen scientists in documenting what they're seeing, even in their backyards, or if they go on a field trip somewhere. You could take pictures now with your cell phones, and so it's a great way to have citizens involved in tracking what changes we might be seeing.
Yeah, I think we here at KHOI first became aware of citizen scientists over a year ago when we were talking about the Christmas bird count. And this, of course, is a great example of citizen science. And I noticed when I went onto the web to look at the websites you mentioned, and we'll talk about those a little more later, the Audubon Society is encouraging people to also be on the lookout for butterflies as well as the birds in citizen science.
Well, the people who are good at birding, after they get past, you know, knowing all the bird species they could, a lot of times they'll move to another taxonomic group, and butterflies seem to be a common switch. So so it's people who are really observant who are good at that kind of thing. And we started out with Christmas bird counts, and then we had a variety of other bird transects that were collected over decades in the U.S., and now we've got things like eBird and eButterfly and 4th of July butterfly counts, so there's all kinds of things like that.
Diane, I was thinking about you yesterday. I was sitting in front of the Pantorium here on Douglas Street in front of the radio station, and it was a really beautiful night, very kind of bright blue sky, evening sky with this kind of golden light. And there was one monarch butterfly that was just circling around and around and around here on Douglas Avenue. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, it looked like it was kind of riding the updrafts.
Yeah, yeah.
In the air between the buildings. And it was just such a beautiful thing. And I was, you know, thinking about how precious the monarchs are, and they just had this, you know, this kind of spot of gold and orange against the blue sky, and it was just very beautiful.
Yeah, I think butterflies are intriguing. Everybody's excited about them. You might learn about them when you're a small child, and you know, somebody gives you a butterfly net, and mm-hmm. just the fact that they're so amazing and that they can fly, and you know, when you look at them closely, you can see that their eyes are interesting and that they have this thing called a proboscis, which they can unroll. It's like a little straw that rolls up around their mouth, and they unroll it to sip their nectar. So they have lots of intriguing aspects, mm-hmm. and they're definitely a good way to get people interested in nature and also interested in insects.
And I did see once a monarch gathering at mm-hmm. Isaac Walton Lead Park where mm-hmm. they were getting ready to travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to put in a plug for our website. You've been talking about the real, seeing the real thing. Mm-hmm. But Diane sent me four links. I think it was four mm-hmm. yesterday about the e-butterfly and so mm-hmm. forth. And I put them all on the KHOI website. So if people would like to have an easy way to find these beautiful butterfly connections, go to khoifm.org and look into, well, it's today's program. When it'll be up, I am not quite sure, but today or tomorrow.
Sounds good.
They'll
yeah.
be able to click it, and they're over those websites.
Yeah, there are lots of amazing websites. So if you're interested in learning how to identify insects, there's something called Bug Guide. And then if you're interested in insect conservation, there's an organization called the Xerces Society, spelled X-E-R-C-E-S, which is actually named after a rare butterfly, a small blue butterfly that went extinct. And there's Monarch Watch, which is hosted out of University of Kansas. So there are a variety of different resources that you can get on and take a look at.
So it is important to plant milkweed? For the monarchs?
So, yeah, everybody's concerned about milkweed at monarchs right now, because the monarchs have suffered a huge decline in their population size. So one of the issues is how do we mitigate that? And the milkweed that used to be in between the corn plants is no longer there in the same numbers. And so the central U.S., has become less of a prime habitat for monarchs. So figuring out how to mitigate that, how do we create habitat, is something that a lot of organizations are working on, including the Xerces Society. And there is a petition to consider the listing of the monarch right now under the Endangered and Threatened
Really?
Species
Wow.
you know, listing. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And it's because of the decline, the significant decline they've suffered in the past few decades.
Wow. That's a sobering thought.
And very sobering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they never come to my milkweeds. is there anything else you'd like to add, Diane?
Well, I guess I'd like to say it's important to notice all those species out there, and some of them are more showy than others. So we have about over 100 species of butterflies in Iowa, and I really hope that people do keep an eye out for monarchs, but also keep an eye out for all those other species. And some of them are relatively easy to identify. Other ones are a little trickier, but there are lots of great resources out there, and I'd encourage people to try to just notice what's out there in their backyard and when they go out for hikes to see what species are out there.
Well, you mentioned to me a butterfly called the skipper. You said there are lots of skippers.
Yeah. So skippers are these little brown things that some people might actually, if they first saw them, they might think they're moths. They're a little brown. They're triangular shaped. They kind of skip along. Some of them are a little on the orange side. Yeah. They're not anywhere as showy. They're small, you know, like maybe a half of an inch or maybe a little bit more than that across. But they're really great indicators of high-quality grasslands and high-quality wetlands. And we've lost a lot of those species over the past mm-hmm. few decades. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need to keep an eye out for some of these more obscure things, these what some people might call enigmatic microfauna as opposed to the charismatic megafauna, right? So getting people out there to learn some of these species. We have little, you know, field guides out there, some of them that fit in your pocket and other ones that you can look at on web apps. So it's time to get out there and take a look at nature.
Well, thank you, Diane.
And
now maybe we can hear from Stephen Colbert, who has a little comment about extinction.
I know the world's a complicated place, and I'm no scientist, but I have never bought into all the alarmism around climate change. Why fear change? Maybe Earth is just going through puberty. Our glaciers are dropping, jungle is cropping up in strange places, and sometimes we wake up and find our streets all wet. It's natural. But it turns out, and I didn't know this, humans aren't the only creatures on the planet.
Climate change will affect North American birds. The National Audubon Society says half of our continents, 650 species, will be forced to find new places to live, feed, and breed over the next 65 years.
Folks, these are scare tactics from the loon-loving loons at the Audubon Society. The study author actually names one bird that will thrive as the Earth warms. Quote, you want to know what climate change sounds like? It's the sound of a mourning dove. Yes. The haunting call of the mourning dove reminds us of all we've lost. Let me guess. The other surviving species will be the northern guilt-trip sparrow and the I told you songbird.
I told you so. I told you so.
But sadly, official state birds like Louisiana brown pelican, Vermont's hermit thrush, and New Hampshire's purple finch will be pushed out of their states completely. Then suddenly the hundreds of hours I spent memorizing state trivia seems like a total waste of time.
Well, thank you, Stephen. And now that we have had a little humor, I think it's time to shift gears, but with a little bit more because Diane will be leaving. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Diane.
And Larry Sloan is here to be talking with Ed Fallon that we need to get on the phone. So while this is happening, let's listen to Peter Mayer singing Waking Up.
Last night I was dreaming I was in my GMC. I was feeling kind of empty because it was just a 93. So I filled it full of fossil from the bosom of the earth, which I burned up quite a lot of on my long commute to work, where I worked at what I hated just to keep up with the bills, which I paid to meet the rising cost of feeling unfulfilled, which I felt at every moment with occasional respite, like the times that I go shopping or watch TV shows at night. But I'm waking up. I'm waking up. I'm waking up. Last night I was dreaming of the one eternal hope that my life would be improved if the economy would grow, which already was a monster on a mission to consume and was eating almost everything and running out of room. And it whispered to me, hey mister, here's some products that you need. The standard of your living is too low, and I agreed. So I got myself a credit card with not a penny down and a long ride on the not so merry money go round. But I'm waking up. I'm waking up. Yeah, the world was like an Amoco, and I said, fill her up with a house, a car, a VCR, a lawn, and all that stuff. But I got a nagging notion that enough did not exist, and at the end of every day I'd wonder, is this all there is? And someone said, hey, you already got 10 times more than the rest, and 6 billion other people want the little that's still left. But I snapped, it's a free country, my rights, it's mine to keep. And by the way, who do I pay to take away this garbage heap? And I'm waking up! I'm waking up! So benign. I mean, all I ever wanted was a smidgen of the pie, some comfort and security and good things for my kids, and okay to please the neighbors and my ego while I did. Anyway, it's great to be awake and feeling satisfied with seeking out the simple and the deeper things in life, with giving to the world instead of hoarding it for me. Well, I guess I'm not too excited about falling back to sleep. As crazy as it was, hey, was it a dream or not? Just promise that you'll save me if I ever start to nod. Put no-dos in my coffee, throw me outside in the cold. Just don't ever say, okay now, back to bed you go, cause I'm waking up. I'm waking up. I'm waking up. Dream. The American dream.
Hello, Ed.
Ed is on the phone. Hello. How are you?
Great. Good morning. So are you awake?
Of course I'm awake.
Have you been walking already?
Yes, I started walking already. Yeah, no, we woke up around 5:15 this morning, and you know, the breakfast was served. It was oatmeal. No offense to our chef this morning, but his oatmeal is kind of like a big lump of clay. And you know, you cook raisins in that oatmeal, and they turn into these large. They almost look like they look like large insects that have swelled up. So anyway, I just thought, you know, I've had my fill of oatmeal. I'm in an Amish town, Shipshawana, Indiana. I'm going to go find me a good, hearty Amish breakfast, and I did. And when they heard that I was walking across the country, they actually charged me a discount. So my belly is happy, and I'm ready to continue the walk about 17 and a half miles east toward beyond a little town called LaGrange. But this is sure beautiful country here, Susan.
I feel like I'm right there with you. I think I was so excited to get in touch with you that I didn't introduce you. So could you introduce yourself and where you've already said where you are and what you had for breakfast.
we start with the important details there. Yeah, this is Ed Fallon. I'm the founder of the Great March for Climate Action, and obviously from Des Moines, and missing Central Iowa badly. But, you know, we're walking all the way from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., 3,000 miles, an eight-month odyssey, to raise awareness about the imperative for action on the climate crisis. And we will soon be in Ohio. Friday we walk into Ohio, but I will miss Indiana. Indiana has been a fantastic experience. Of course, we started by, you know, walking from Chicago into Gary. Nice people in Gary. So horrible fossil fuel infrastructure, some of the most horrific industrial scenes I've ever witnessed in my life, and we walked right through it. But now out in Amish country, and what a contrast. It is exciting to me to see so many people with such cool beards and bonnets on bikes. I'm used to seeing, you know, a growing amount of bike traffic in Des Moines, and I know there's a lot of bike traffic in Ames as well. But you don't see a lot of bike traffic out in the country. But here you do, at least this time of the year before it gets too cold. But you know those you I imagine, Susan, maybe you've seen the Amish horse and buggy.
Yeah, you mean there's a new technology here. They've got bicycles instead.
As well, they aren't replacing the horse and buggy. In fact, I think the bike is a slower mode of transportation. Those horses book. They move fast. I'm amazed at how quickly they roll on the highway. But we had an interesting and a little bit of a disturbing experience yesterday. Along with our march, we have. I'm not making this up, Susan. We have a covered wagon. And you look at it, you think, that's a covered wagon. It's a small one, but it holds some of the marchers' luggage. It holds water. It holds food and snacks for the trek, so that it'll stop every 5 or 6 miles, and marchers will be able to get a bite to eat, you know, get some water, whatnot, take a break. And it's pulled by a marcher. We don't have a horse pulling it. Marchers pull it. It's not that heavy. It's actually really well balanced. And we also have a rickshaw. And the rickshaw is a little smaller, and that pulls gear as well. And also, if needed, it can pull a marcher. If a marcher gets injured, or we actually have a couple kids on the march. If the kids are walking and they get tired, we stick them back in there. And the person pulling the rickshaw or the covered wagon just... they find that the extra weight is not that big of a burden. But I pulled it for the first time yesterday. I'd never pulled it before. I thought I'd give it a shot. And we're walking down the main highway coming into Shipshawana, and a horse and buggy approaches on the other side of the road. We're on the left. They're on the right side of the road. And the horse absolutely freaks out. I was afraid it was going to topple the carriage. And I heard there were kids inside the carriage. I could hear them, you know, talking. Very concerned, and so we didn't know which side of the street was best to be on, but no matter what side of the street we were on, it terrified the horse. And I don't know whether it was the blue and yellow combination, the color of the wagon, the fact that it was a totally new experience, the fact that what is usually pulled by a horse in this case is being pulled by a person. I don't know, but it made me very, very nervous to see how aggressively the horses reacted to our wagon. I'm sure it made the drivers of the it made the Amish drivers of the carts nervous as well.
But it all came out all right.
It came out all right. But apparently it wasn't the first time. Some of the other people pulling the rickshaw and the covered wagon had a similar experience earlier in the day. Yeah, but it's absolutely beautiful country. You're going along the road, and you don't see huge farmsteads with no huge spreads of crops with very few houses in between. You see lots of houses with smaller acreages and broken up crops, pasture, hay fields, gardens, and laundry hanging everywhere. I've never for the life of me understood the appeal of the dryer. Okay, washing machine, I get that. That's a huge time saver, a huge energy saver. But I failed to understand the attraction of the modern dryer. And so it was delightful yesterday to be able to walk along the highway and see line after line hung with clothes drying in the breeze. You know, and I think, wow, what a savings of energy there. I mean, how much time, I know it's a little more time, but how much money and energy is saved by hanging one's clothes on the line. So to me, that was a delight to see. I think we have a lot we can learn from the Amish, and it's been a great experience to be able to spend a couple days in, I think, what is the second, I've been told, is the second largest concentration of Amish in the country after Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Well, but an interesting day you had, and I have to make a comment about laundry hanging on the line because Fritz's mother actually discovered that late in her life. She lived in New York until she retired, and then she moved to a place where she had laundry hanging on her line, and she talked about how wonderful the sheets smelled, how great the smell was of that laundry that was dried in the sun. And I've noticed the same thing when I less often hang my things out. Now there are people here in Iowa who may not have been following you, and one of these who's has not been following you until now is Larry Sloan from Nevada, who came over to us last week. He was actually brought in by Wild Man. It was a pretty wild day to wake us up. And he said he'd like to talk to you. So here's Larry Sloan from the Talent Factory in Nevada.
Ed, good morning.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
I'm well. You sound like you're doing very well out there.
Well, I think so. You know, it was a tough night, actually. It gets down to 40 degrees here, and we're in our tents, and we're camping on an auction ground, and there's a big dairy barn just down from where we're, just upwind, actually, from where we're camping. And the cows were going all night long.
Oh.
And at first, it was weird, Larry. And at first, when I heard it in the background, I'm not making this up. This is what my mind thought. Someone is playing a tape of Gregorian chant. I thought these cows lowing were a choir of monks. But as the night got a little more quiet around us and the cows got a little louder, I realized, no, these are cows in distress. And they went on. They were in distress all night long.
They probably weren't in distress. They were probably irritated that you're sleeping near them, and they wanted to make a protest.
Well, you know, you can blame me for a lot of things. I'm not going to take credit for the cows being unhappy now.
Ed, what you're doing is amazing, and it's really great. I'm glad that I got to find out more about it. My idea of roughing it is a Motel 6 with a black and white TV. And as far as walking, I can't get my paperboy to walk up to my doorstep. So having you walk across the country is really quite a feat.
Send your paperboy my way. We'll train him just right.
I don't think he's going to walk that far, Ed. He'll have to take a plane to get to you.
Well, once he's here, we'll get him going in the right direction.
There you go. Ed, you've got to meet a lot of very interesting people out there. I mean, there's all sorts of people. Is there any one person that you've met that really kind of sticks out in your mind?
Oh, no. I mean, I could go on and on about the people I meet. Just yesterday here in Shipshawana, ran into two Amish women on a bike and asked them for directions. And the older one, she's in her 30s, 40s maybe, just very conversational. I mean, just and I asked her about climate change. She says, oh, well, you can't really change the climate, can you? I mean, it wasn't something she thought about, but, you know, as we explained a little bit more about it, it kind of made some sense. And she was just very helpful with directions. there were two of us walking at the time. She says, "Well, you look like you could use some bananas." So she handed us three bananas and told us a little bit about her upcoming vacation. They're going to take her. She and her husband are going to take a train to Washington D.C. and they were excited about that. And just very bright, cheery, happy, and helpful people. I was just very. Again, I could tell you, I meet an interesting person every day, Larry. It's a great country we have here, and a lot of wonderful people, and we may not all agree on everything, but I think my feeling is that people, when they finally get the information they need, they understand that they have an obligation and a responsibility to tackle a problem. And, I mean, I can't think of a bigger problem than the climate crisis.
Yeah, I think where we live, I mean, everybody wants to keep their own yard clean, and they need to extend that out a little bit. Work out to their neighbor's yard and their city and state. So I think bringing that to their attention and giving them an opportunity to say, you know, that's a good idea. Maybe we should try to practice that a little more than we do. So, Ed, you mentioned earlier bearded people on bicycles. It sounds like Ames during the college season. We get a lot of those up here. So when I was a kid growing up, I had a friend who rode a bicycle and a bonnet, which was a little strange because it was a guy. But
that is a little different. Yeah,
he was helping the environment, I guess.
Okay, I imagine the bearded bikers in Ames probably also have mustaches, right?
I would guess. I ride a bike. I'm a firm biker. It's called a Harley, and but it's funny that the bikers, people on two wheels, generally have a lot of respect for each other. I mean, we watch out for them. We try to make sure they have a good roadway, even when they're on two wheels and a bicycle. So I think it's a matter of getting everybody together on the same page and mutual respect for everybody.
When I walk along the highway, I will wave to vehicles that pass, cars, trucks, motorcycles, all that, and the motorcyclists, the bikers, are by far the most responsive in terms of waving back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's we consider it kind of a brotherhood just to be outside the big metal shell.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're a peripheral part of that brotherhood then by walking.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's great to have you. It's very interesting, everything you do out there.
Yeah, speaking of keeping places clean, we're going to go to one of the places that, it's a concrete jungle. We're heading to New York, as you might know, for the People's Climate March, and we're all pretty excited about that. And I'm also excited to know that there are great things happening back in Iowa for people who may not be able to make the trip. And I understand there's a great event happening on Sunday in Ames.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there is.
Yes, there is. At 2 o'clock, there's a film that's right in the spirit of some of the things we've been talking about. It's called Disruption. And so this is to get people ready for our own little local demonstration at 3 o'clock. This is what we'll talk about on Friday, because we have a great interview that you did with Stephen Biggs, who will be in New York, about the events here in Ames over the weekend, and also explaining what the purpose is, because part of the purpose is just to wake people up. But he's involved with an organization called Citizens Climate Lobby that actually has a proposal for a solution. And the way – what the proposal is and who's making the proposals, it's not those liberals, is really going to be interesting. So we hope our listeners will listen into that interview that we're going to be playing it on Local Talk on Friday.
Yeah, and that film is definitely worth seeing. I just saw it the other day in South Bend. I finally get to see it at Notre Dame, of all places. And it's called Disruption, and it is about it's not about a family Thanksgiving dinner gone bad. It's about what's happening in the climate because of our commitment to burning so much fossil fuel. And we are seeing and should expect to see even more, climatic meteorological disruptions. And perhaps a significant, disruption to our way of life. And that's at 2 o'clock in the Cardinal Room at Memorial Union. And 3:30, the 3:30 following the film is a rally at the corner of Lincoln Way in Welch Ave. So I'd love to be there for that. But again, I'll be in New York, which is, I guess, the best place to be if you can get there.
But anybody can be watching from afar, and that's part of the point. You don't have to just have your big carbon footprint going all in the direction of New York City. And disruption has a double meaning to me. When I heard the name of the film, I wasn't thinking about the climate disruption. I was thinking about people saying, hey, let's do something.
Yeah. Yeah, wake up.
Wake up.
Yeah, we need more people riding bikes like Larry.
Well, I actually have a bike. It's one wheel, and it's in my exercise room. And I've had it for 4 years. I haven't lost a single pound. Apparently, you have to use it to lose weight. I always thought it just sat there and did it by osmosis.
If you want a weight loss program, Larry, I've got one for you. It's called the Great March for Climate Action. Four of us were sitting around the other day, and we realized between the four of us, we lost over 100 pounds.
Wow, that's incredible. I do a lot of walking every day. I mean, I've got a fairly large house, and it's a long way to the refrigerator and back again.
Well, it depends what that refrigerator is full of, too.
Well, yeah, I'm a carnivore, Ed. I believe if I have to fight with a rabbit over my dinner, I'm going to eat the rabbit instead.
Well, now you're a carnivore. That means you don't even eat vegetables or fruit at all. You just eat meat. Are you an omnivore?
Actually, I'm closer. I'm a little omnivore, if that's possible. I do love fruits and such, and I actually do eat corn, especially Iowa corn on the cob. And I like lettuce, I guess. I do have something in common with a rabbit.
Well, and if you've got them in your garden, you have a little competition with the rabbits.
But, I got to admit, I'm an omnivore, but I don't eat a lot of meat back home. But when my weight loss started getting to the point where my muscles are being impacted, where the proteins in the fibers of my legs are being consumed,
sure.
which I think is what was happening, I found myself craving meat. I'd be walking along the side of the road, and I'd see a cow, and I'd want to jump on it and just start biting it. But I resisted and decided I would settle for stopping at some small town diners and cafes along the way.
Oh.
But you know, I'm eating meat probably two or three times a day now, which is really unusual for me. But
well,
it's helping.
You do need the protein, obviously, and to keep muscle tone. But it's, you can't beat small-town cooking either. That's really great food normally.
Oh, yeah. I've been particularly impressed with the food here in Amish country.
You know, it's really interesting how our program has kind of cycled around. We started off talking about the garden. So great to talk to you again, Ed, and we'll be keeping up with you over the next week. Actually, I have to tell you about my T-shirt that I'm wearing. I got it from a friend who's had a slogan from her grandson. So the front of it has footsteps on it, and the back says, keep going. So keep going, Ed.
I will. Thank you. Good to talk to you too, Larry.
Yeah, Ed, great talking to you. You're doing a great thing out there. Keep it up.
You've been listening to Local Talk today on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. And today we spoke with Andrea Bosch from the Food at First Garden on Ontario Street, and Diane Dubinsky, who spoke about research about butterflies, and Ed Fallon, who is walking across the country. And Larry, thanks for coming in from the Talent Factor in Nevada and joining our team, and hope to have you again with us again soon. And your hosts today have been Ursula Rudenberg, myself, and Susan Franson, and Becca Brown is our engineer, as always. Music you heard included Waking Up by Peter Mayer from his CD Bountiful, plus a brief clip from Stephen Colbert from the Colbert Report on climate change. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kay Chelly. You can listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you can also find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since 2012. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. And there you'll find a list of guests and links to the organizations we've mentioned on the show. We also want to remind you that KHOI is online live now, streaming live on the web at khoifm.org. You can see the link to the live stream on our homepage. And also, our shows are archived in real time online. So if there's a show that you would like to hear again, you can also find it in the archive at that link as well. tell your friends about the stream, especially your friends and family who are outside of our listening area. We love reaching the rest of the world, and so our DJs are telling us that they're getting requests from West Virginia and Illinois, so that's very nice to hear that. And so Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join the team, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or at khoiradio@gmail. That's khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible and Local Talk possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
KHOI 89.1 FM, Ames, Story City, and surrounding area.